Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. Want to thank everybody for your great support during the spring membership drive, which ends tomorrow, and I'm not going to dwell on it right now, but the drive ends tomorrow, so if you haven't yet supported WNYC in 2008, you'll do it right now, I hope, and perhaps with this one other deadline in mind, which is that at noon, so less than an hour from now, the Tuscany contest closes. So anybody who calls or logs on, you don't have to pledge to enter, but of course we hope you will. And if you want to make a pledge sometime, why not do it right now while we have this trip for two to Tuscany contest going, courtesy of Bloomsbury Auctions, and we thank them for their generosity, which helps us to give you this extra incentive. And God, I sure hope a Brian Lehrer Show listener wins this trip. So the deadline for that is noon. Get those pledges in right now. 1-888-376-WNYC. 1-888-376-9692. Or pledge online at WNYC.org. Thank you, thank you, and thank you. And an interesting development in the Sean Bell shooting case today. The officers who were acquitted in the criminal trial and four other officers are being brought up on departmental charges, including some pretty serious ones that I don't think ever got mentioned at the trial. All three who stood trial are now accused by the police department itself of firing their guns outside of departmental guidelines. The lead officer who approached Bell's car, Detective Isnora, is also charged with improperly taking enforcement action while he was supposed to be working as an undercover. And there's more. So let's talk about it with WNYC's Bob Henley, who has long covered the NYPD, and WNYC's Arun Venugopal, who covered the trial. Bob, what do these charges mean?
Well, I think it means that you may remember that the judge in the actual trial, Arthur Cooperman in State Supreme Court, said at one point that, quote, questions of carelessness and incompetence must be left to other forums, because clearly this was not a by-the-book operation that resulted in the tragic death of Sean Bell and the grievous wounding of his friends. And so now this is an opportunity for the department to basically hold these officers accountable. I might add also that it includes a supervisor in the case, Lieutenant Gary Napoli, and that it also even expands to the post-shooting response in terms of the way forensic evidence was gathered by the officers responsible for that. So what you see here is an effort by the department. Some people might say who are supportive of the police that it's political. Advocates would say that this is an effort of transparency and accountability.
Arun, were these things referenced by the prosecution in the trial?
Well, if anything, they was actually conspicuously absent. And that was quite perplexing to me during the trial for some time. But then I spoke to Michael Palladino, the head of the Detectives Endowment Association, and we were talking about how that was, you know, they weren't referenced, but basically he was saying, you know, it's penal law. That's really the only standard that can be applied here, and administrative charges are left for, you know, as the judge sort of referenced, shorthand for other forums, and that would be for this ongoing charges right now.
That's really interesting, because honestly, and Arun, you and I have talked about this, we did our weekly segments throughout the trial as you were covering it. I thought this is what the trial would be largely about, a kind of criminally negligent homicide, if you will, where the negligence was breaking police procedures that they were supposed to know about and supposed to follow so as not to unnecessarily endanger innocent people. And that seems to be exactly what the police department itself is saying happened. So why wouldn't the prosecution have made this case? Fired guns outside of what appear to be departmental procedures, approached as an undercover, a civilian outside of what seems to be departmental procedures, even without these formal charges having been filed yet by the department.
Well, actually, there was maybe one or two instances where Charles Testagrossa, the lead prosecutor, tried to refer to these kinds of failings, and he was sort of stomped down. There was one moment where Anthony Rico, one of the defense lawyers, just jumped up and said, objection. And he said, you know, judge, we already discussed this. This is, you know, obviously on a sidebar, we couldn't hear these kinds of details. But he said, that's a matter of the patrolman's guide. Those kinds of rules are not applicable in this courtroom.
And the judge agreed that those were not admissible arguments?
He sustained it right there.
Wow. So, Bob, what about the timing of this then? Were these charges delayed to protect the officers evidence at criminal trial?
The couple of things. One is, I think, to go back to what you said before about the trial. The undercover officers in this case were permitted to have at least a two-drink minimum to establish their undercover, and it was established that they were drinking. But under the policy that existed at the time, there was never a breathalyzer to establish the level of alcohol that they had. So what we had is a kind of uneven playing field in terms of what was actually discussed in court. You had Sean Bell's excessive alcohol level entered into evidence, which kind of went towards discrediting the accounts of the people that were the victims, while the police level of alcohol was never disclosed. Now, that policy changed afterwards, but it didn't have any relevance in this case. I might say that had there been a breathalyzer test and they had been shown to be, if they theoretically had exceeded the alcohol level, then you would have gotten into what you described before about not having the standard of care or carelessness. But without that, with the record being silent on it,
right,
it was really tough for the prosecution.
And they changed that policy as a result of this case. Now officers
right.
who are going undercover in bars like Club Kahlua, or I guess any officer, if they fire their weapon, right?
If you wound anyone. Right.
But what about the departmental charges? I mean, were they sitting on this
until now?
Because one could argue that there's no neutral here. You either charge them with it before the trial so it can be used as evidence, or you wait until now so it can't.
What we have is something called what you can describe as competing legal imperatives. The first is also the criminal law. That takes preeminence over everything. And under that, the police officers have, of course, the Fifth Amendment guarantee of not speaking, in anything that incriminates themselves. If they speak at an internal department proceeding where they're required as a term of their employment to do that, then all of a sudden they're put in the position where they would have to incriminate themselves. Moreover, a lot of people don't realize this. They think there's a blue wall of silence, that officers don't speak to their supervisors after something like this happens. The prosecutors don't want the police department to weigh in as an employer to talk to these officers involved in these shootings, because that stuff is automatically gives them immunity and it can't be used at trial.
Huh.
So you have to sort through the stuff. Similarly, there's
a
deadline. You ask for the deadline. There is a certain period of time that they have to charge. I think it's 18 months after the incident. Also, add to this level, further complicating it, is the ongoing U.S. attorney's look at this. So this really can't go forward until that is concluded.
18-month deadline after the incident. That's around now. They must be right up on that deadline.
And that's why they had to file what they did to preserve their options later on.
Uh-huh. Who were the others charged, Arun? Four others in addition to the three who stood trial.
Well, you had the three officers who were on trial. You had Giscardes, Nora, you had Cooper, and Michael Oliver, of course, as you mentioned. Michael Carey was a witness on the stand for the prosecution. He shot that night. He wasn't charged, though. And actually, they did. The prosecution did have some actual positive words for him, contrasting his actions that night with the actions of another man, Mark Cooper, saying that Michael Carey clearly identified a target, planted his feet, and proceeded, whereas Cooper didn't do that.
So what was he charged with by the department?
With discharging his weapon, outside of departmental guidelines.
Him too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Bob, there's also
forensic team.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, you brought that up, the forensic team. If they improperly handled the scene, are they being accused of covering something up to protect police officers?
Well, it was actually Sergeant Hugh McNeil and Detective Robert Knapp of the crime scene unit are charged with failing to thoroughly process the crime scene. And I guess the sergeant with failing to ensure that a thorough processing was done. Not that they put the thumb on the scale, but they didn't follow guidelines. Also, what's interesting is that another officer involved in the shooting was Detective Paul Headley, but he was not charged. And that's because the department says the evidence at this point doesn't support it.
Well, I'm told that it could be forthcoming.
And then there's Lieutenant Gary Napoli, who was in charge at the scene that night. He was a lot of people's least favorite witness at the trial, people who felt that he did not comport himself very well. And he even got charges of being a coward leveled at him after his testimony.
Brian,
But now he's been charged too, Bob.
Right. I think that the charge was for failure to have tactical plans in place. What's instructive about this is that the department really tipped its hand. There was a blue ribbon panel convened after the shooting. They came out with a list of recommendations to try to change the way the department went forward in this. And many of these issues that were not appropriately teased out at trial were brought out in this blue ribbon panel. Of course, it had nothing to do with the facts of the case. But reading between the lines, you can see that this really went off the reservation in terms of how it went down. And this review by this blue ribbon panel was an attempt to try to bring people back to basics.
Bob, tell me about one other thing while you're here. An arbitrator this week granted a pretty good retroactive pay raise to members of the NYPD.
Depends on who you talk to. What it did do is, for people who there's been this impasse going on forever, a very bitter contract dispute between the PBA and the Bloomberg administration. As a matter of fact, it's so bitter this only resolves 2004 to 2006. What you did see is a bump up for the starting salary from $25,000 to just over $35,000. And for the veterans who've been there for 5 years, the maximum pay goes up to $65,000. The PBA argues that while that is better, it is nowhere near the surrounding jurisdictions where you can get like $85,000 to kind of watch the grass grow across the Hudson. Mm-hmm. And so there is still this kind of standoff. As a matter of fact, they have to head right back to the bargaining table. There's about a $50 million budget implication here because the Bloomberg administration anticipated that it would be like a 6% increase. When you figure in the give backs, I mean, by the way, this boost for the young patrolmen, that came at a heavy cost for them. They had to give up half their vacation days, so they lost 10 of those for the first 5 years of service.
10? You mean they used to get 4 weeks of vacation.
They got 20 days. That's right.
Now they get just 2 weeks of vacation,
right,
being a police officer on the streets of New York City?
Exactly. And there's a whole bunch of other Byzantine givebacks that are in the PERB resolution of this matter. And so the implication, of course, is now all the uniformed services under a century-old requirement that includes sanitation, corrections, and fire can come back and renegotiate their contracts for that period.
Interesting.
And it could be like $185 billion all told of a new cost.
And we have to leave it there, but I'll just mention that the last time Ray Kelly was here, and we had a kind of broad conversation about his 15 years being involved at the top of the New York City Police Department, on and off 15 years. And I said, what's the biggest problem that you would like to see resolved, the one biggest thing? And he said, the $25,000 starting salary for rookie cops. So at least that got bumped up to 35. All right, WNYC's Bob Henley.
Thanks
WNYC's
very much.
Arun Venugopal. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, those new health concerns about the bottles used for bottled water. Stay with us.